supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up a little later in the show, 'tis the season to get your compost cooking. The big question, should you cover your pile or leave it open for the winter? We will provide direct answers to that question after lots of your fabulous phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Sharon, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
I am just ducky today. Sharon, how are you?
I am well, thank you.
And where is Sharon well?
In Joplin, Missouri.
Ooh, was it humid enough for you this summer now?
Yes. Yeah, we have some strange swings of weather.
So what can we do for Sharon in Joplin?
I have a problem with keeping leaf mulch in place on a berm that has some elevation to it and slope to it. I've been living in this place for a couple of years, and last year I ripped out the black plastic that some criminal had put in there.
Right.
But the berm in some places, the better part of it, the soil has turned to concrete and the rain just sluices right off it.
How elevated is this berm?
Oh, the total height might be 2.5 feet, something like that.
Okay. Does it serve a physical purpose?
Yes, the, quote, landscaper who put it in planted large trees there. In one section, there are crepe myrtles. In the section I'm talking about, there are a couple of redbuds. And in another section, there are some river birches.
Right. What's the purpose of the berm? I still don't get it.
I wish I could get my hands on that guy, but...
Are the trees planted in front of, behind, or on top of the berm?
They were planted right into the berm at the top.
How wide is it?
4 feet, maybe 5 feet.
Wow, those poor trees.
Uh-huh.
Do we want to landscape both sides, or are we just concerned about the side that's kind of facing us, so to speak?
Mostly the side that's facing the house.
So what I'm going to suggest is you have a big truckload of compost or topsoil delivered, and
okay,
then get some help and shovel it up against the front of the berm so that instead of the berm being kind of almost rectangular with a drop, you soften the drop.
Okay.
And then you have instant manageable soil going up the front of this thing. So
right,
then you can install your ground cover of choice right, yep, into this freshly delivered material. If for some reason you have mushroom soil available to you down in Missouri, just make mm-hmm. sure that it would be aged and not fresh.
Okay.
But a compost topsoil mixture would be ideal in this situation.
Okay.
Spread that in front of the berm and then plant your ground cover in that. It'll go right up to the top. And then in
yep.
subsequent years, you will have more of a space up top that will accept and hold future compost.
Okay.
Because it won't be
okay.
so pointy.
Right.
And
yep.
if it works perfectly, then just keep adding material at the top, because then you'll have a wider area for it to fall onto. And your ground cover should just naturally cover the
yes.
top over time.
Right. I thought once I got ground cover in there, then it will hold what you put in there.
Exactly. But right now, I understand the situation. The runoff there has got to be extreme. I know you have some of those hard pan soils down there that are...
Right. There's a lot of clay.
...virtually unimprovable. But you get a big load delivered. And, you know, maybe this area is so big you need two loads. But you can do it over the course of even a couple of seasons or over the course of a summer, get some, you know, hire some kids to come by for a day and help you build this thing, but make it more of a sloping area. And I think it could be sensational.
Well, that sounds like a plan. I can certainly try to do that. And then, but there's no even trying to do anything with the hard soil that's there. Just leave it alone, and over 100 years or so, it'll improve itself.
Well, actually, the more compost that's in the mixture above it will slowly force the soil underneath to improve itself.
Excellent. Good. I will do that.
All right. Good luck, Sharon.
I'll send you pictures when I have something to brag about.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you so much, Mike. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. You take care.
Okay. You too. Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Mike, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Mike, how are you?
Thrilled to be on your show.
Well, we'll take care of that promptly. Where are you, Mike?
I'm calling from Suffolk County, Long Island.
Oh, I remember talking to some garden clubs in Long Island years and years ago. What a hardcore, devoted gardening community you got out there.
I've got a great east-facing property with very sandy soil.
Yes, but you can add compost to that soil and make it well-draining and nutritious. I got clay soil, which can only be improved with a backhoe.
Yeah, I get so much knowledge from your show, and I've heard a lot about fig trees, but I have
we
a
could
question.
We could change the name of the show to Figs Are Us.
It's a great, great tree, but I am debating what to do with mine. I bought a celeste over the summer and repotted it, and now all the leaves have dropped.
Right.
And you told most people, put it in the garage, leave it alone, and visit it again in March. Well,
right.
I have two other options. I have a greenhouse, which has no heat, gets pretty warm in the sunlight, and drops to about 20 degrees at night. And then inside my house, I have an east and south-facing sunroom, which never drops really below 40 and stays in the mid-60s. During the day. What is my best option of those three?
Not the final two. See, no. Fig trees are unusual. They're not citrus. I mean, people know that they need to be protected in the north over the winter. But they are not year-round plants, even in their Mediterranean natural climate. They like a little bit of winter. They like a little bit of chill. They may even require a little bit of chill. So it would be a mistake to try to keep it growing like a house plant year-round.
Okay.
You might reduce the possibility of flowering and fruiting. And also inside, the little wasps that are necessary to produce figs are not going to be able to get to it, so you'd never get any fruit. The
gotcha.
Greenhouse would be a death trap. I mean, would you want to be roasting in hot, blinding sun all day and then be dropped down to 20 degrees? That's what you do to get prisoners to give up their secrets, man. That's no way to treat a plant. So this thing is in a pot, and it's always going to be in a pot?
Correct.
You don't have outdoor space?
I've got a lot of outdoor space.
Do you have any deciduous trees? Do you have any leaves around?
Oh, yeah, and I've got a ton of leaves. I've got two different compost bins going. I mulch everything, so I've got plenty of carbon products all over the property.
What kind of pot is it?
It's a 20-inch diameter hard plastic.
Okay, good. Take the fig tree outside. Roll it up. Turn it on its side. Roll it against the north side of your house if you can, but any side but facing south or east. You can put it on the north side, the west side, and then use whatever you use to shred your leaves, to shred up a ton of leaves, and bury it in like 2 to 6 inches of shredded leaves. Leave it there, and then in March, just pull it out, stand it up, and let nature take its course.
So I'm planting it and then lying it down and burying it.
No, you're just, it's staying in its pot, like you said. You're just.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you're just dragging it outside. If it were terracotta or, you know, ceramic pot, we couldn't do this.
Okay.
But the plastic will be fine. You roll it against the north-facing side of your house where it's not going to get heated up and cooled down and everything like that. and then you insulate it with a whole bunch of shredded leaves. You know, because you have a fairly moderate climate on Long Island. You know, you're surrounded by all that water, a much more moderate climate than, like, your latitude would lead people to believe. So I think it should be outside where it's going to get its winter chill, insulated by 2 to 6 inches of shredded leaves. And in the springtime, stand it up. When it starts greening up again, let it green up for 2-3 weeks. Take a good look at it. Prune off any damaged or dead areas, and you will get figs.
Oh, boy. That's a big pile of leaves.
Yeah. And okay. if the side of the house isn't appropriate, then the side of the garage, the side of one of the compost piles. But you know what I mean.
Sure, sure. Okay, so I'll lean it over and bury it and see it again next spring.
I think your fig tree will love it. This is what Italians do, except they bury it in the ground.
Well, I am Italian, so I guess I should pay more attention to what my ancestors have been doing.
Just talk to it with an Italian accent and tell it, you know, this is, you're a fig tree, I'm Italian, we were made for each other.
I'll mix some garlic in with my leaves.
All right. All right, Mike, good luck.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate it very much. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind everybody with a pre-cut Christmas tree to keep the water in that tree holder filled. Many growing areas were bone dry this fall, and cut trees are going to be sucking up gallons more water than usual. But don't go checking your reservoir just yet, because we'll be right back with comments about compost and more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, I hope each and every one of you has some compost cooking this time of year. And one of the questions that comes to mind is, should I cover that compost or leave it exposed to the air, rain, and or snow if you are lucky enough to get that frozen precipitation? We will answer that question directly after a couple of your precipitous phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Elaine, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike.
Hello, Elaine. How are you?
I'm awesome. How are you?
Oh, excellent. Excellent. I don't know we've had anybody awesome on the show in a while. Where is Elaine displaying her awesomeness?
In Glen Spey, New York, the Western Catskills.
Oh, okay. Very good. Pretty country out there.
Yeah, beautiful.
All right. What can we do for Elaine in the interestingly named Glen Spey, New York?
So I have a Meyer lemon tree in a clay pot that I've brought inside for the winter. It's not doing very well. It's lost the majority of its leaves, but it's still flowering. And it has not grown in the past few years. I bring it in and out. And I don't know if I should prune it. I know you don't like us to prune anything this time of year, but it still has flowers on it.
Okay.
Inside.
So you got a Meyer lemon. It's a couple of years old. You've had it for a couple of years. Have you gotten lemons off of it yet?
I've had it for like 5 years. And in the beginning, I got quite a few lemons. This last year, I got none. Like they would start and then they would fizzle.
Okay. So it was outside in the summer.
Yes.
Did you bring it in before the nights dropped below 50 degrees?
Yes. I basically, each year, I bring it into the house for the winter, outside when it gets warm, and then I do like an interim in my greenhouse, which is not heated, before I bring it into the house. It never freezes.
What did I say? I said 50 degrees.
Oh, 50.
Yeah.
Wow.
Come on. These.
I think I'm good with 50. I think 50's right. Yeah, no, I don't think I left it out 50.
These are
even all summer, though, it never got any leaves.
Well, that's bizarre. It never got any leaves.
Got some leaves. It had leaves last year, but this summer it never really got any more. It got a few more, but nothing substantial.
Okay. Have you ever repotted it?
I did repot it.
When?
A few years ago.
Okay.
It's been about 3 years.
Okay.
Years.
And what do you feed it?
Well,
be honest.
I do this little concoction every year of this manure. It's like goat, rabbit, chicken manure mixture, and I just put like a little bit on top.
Say what?
I kind of do that with everything, and it seems to work with some things and other things. It just doesn't do anything.
Yeah, I don't think citrus plants want a lot of manure, even though you said goat, sheep, and...
Goat, rabbit, and chicken mostly. It's like
okay. Yeah, the chicken, big mistake. Chicken is very high nitrogen. That's going to suppress flowering and fruiting. Although these indoor citrus plants are heavy feeders. So you say it's flowering now. And this is the season where it should be flowering and developing little fruits. Is it flowering
it's
now?
Flowering.
Okay.
Yes, but no fruit.
What kind of light does it get?
It's in a southern window, and it gets about 6 hours of sun.
Okay. Is the window cold
there
at
is,
night?
Yeah, here's one caveat. So I have a feeling you're going to yell at me about this. This is a weekend house, and when I'm not there, I keep it at 45.
Okay. Well, that's not, you're lucky you haven't killed the plant. It needs a minimum of 50 degrees. Indoor citrus likes to be a little cooler in the winter, but we're talking like 60 degrees. So where do you live during the week?
In New York City.
Do you have a nice window there? Maybe it's a cosmopolitan plant. Maybe it would like to be near the shops and the theater.
I get no direct sun in the city, though.
Okay, but in the city, you can definitely put it under an LED plant light somewhere and brighten up your workday space, and that heat doesn't go down so low for so prolonged a period of time when you're in your weekend place.
Right.
So I think that's the answer. Take it home. Take it to the city. It probably wants to get out more. As you do the transfer, though, try to do this either on a warm day or treat it like a poinsettia. Wrap it up, put it into a warm car. Don't let it be exposed to wintertime temperatures for too long. But give it 8 hours of bright light from an LED plant light on a timer in the city, and just give it a nice, gentle, organic plant food. No more voodoo food. a nice, balanced, liquid plant food. There's lots of nice ones on the market now that are organic. And then this spring, repot it into a bigger pot. You might want to move it into a plastic pot out of a clay pot to help it keep more evenly watered. And if you think you're going to try to pull this off this winter and you want to get fruit, use little Q-tips to move the pollen from flower to flower and see if you can induce some fruiting.
Okay.
But it's never going to be happy below 50
okay.
degrees.
It's true. As I'm speaking, I'm realizing it has just deteriorated like year by year by year. It started really well, and I'm usually fairly good with things, but this is just not working for me. So,
yes, we've reported you to the authorities. There's going to be a horticultural specialist coming to the door, you know.
Oh, great. I would love that, actually.
With a warrant. All right, Elaine, good luck.
Thank you so much. Great talking to you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Larry, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello there. How you doing?
I am just ducky today. Larry, how are you, sir?
I'm doing pretty good today, maintaining altitude.
And where are you, sir?
I'm in Piqua, Ohio.
Oh, okay. So what part of Ohio is that?
North of Dayton, about 25 miles.
Okay, very good. So that's where I was. A while back.
Huh.
Yeah.
Huh. How's it going?
WYSO?
Yeah, I listen to 91.3 around here when I'm not on my XM. I listen to you guys. I work on the weekends, Saturdays, Sundays. I'm up in the morning and listening to you in the mornings when I'm driving. I drive a truck and I go to Michigan back every day. And just had a question for you about catnip.
Catnip? Okay.
My mom, she has catnip out in the country where she lives, and I want to transplant it and grow some of my own where I live, and I live along a river, and there's been 50 years ago, I don't know, years ago, they filled it in with like a cinders from a factory.
Right.
Stuff, and grass is grown all the time, and I was wanting to transplant it into that environment.
Well, first of all, it's very easy to do, but maybe more first, the first of the first, is I have to warn you that catnip is a member of the mint family, which means it's very invasive. Not only will it grow in virtually any situation, but it is very easy to get out of control. So if you...
It's kind of on the side of mom's garage. It's like you could smell it from a distance, and I got cats, and I bring them out here to the country sometimes, let them go, and they love it. I'll take fresh catnip back to them, and, yeah.
Oh, yeah, no, it's no exaggeration. They, you know, that's, I think they legalized it for cats in Colorado, you know. It's So here's the deal, Larry. In the spring, when the catnip starts growing again, when it greens up, when all the plants are growing again, if you look at her patch, there's probably individual plants.
Uh-huh.
If you want to transplant a total plant, do that in the spring right after it starts growing and greening up again. Use a good shovel, get down there pretty deep, maybe take a tarp with you or a big cardboard box to put it in. Then just bring it back to your place. And if you don't care about it spreading everywhere, just dig a hole, put it in the ground, and then let a hose drip at the base of the plant very slowly, just like a dripping faucet, for a couple of hours. And then repeat that once a week until we get good rain or if we don't get good rain. But again, I have to warn you, this thing will take over the entire area unless it's inside a bordered area of some kind. And even then, it can escape when it flowers and goes to seed.
Yeah. All I got is a grass yard. That's all I want. I want catnip.
The other way to do it would be just to take fresh cuttings in the spring and then just put those in little regular plant pots or Dixie cups with holes poked in the bottom with some potting soil from the garden center. Water them well and then plant them when they develop their own roots. But it's almost impossible to fail. Like I said, this is a plant that really wants to grow very strongly.
I was kind of wanting to know what, like, when there's a bunch of seeds at certain time, and there's just a bunch of seeds, I didn't know if I should try to collect them and do something with them or not.
Yes, you can. Yes, you can. And you can also buy catnip seed. Now, if you want to collect seed, what you want to do is you want to wait till those seed pods are dry and brown, and you want to collect the seeds during a dry stretch. And then just keep them inside in a cool, dry spot and plant them where you want them to grow in the spring.
Okay.
But the flowers have to be completely gone, the seeds have to be fully developed, and the pods need to be dry and brown.
Well, okay. Thank you.
All right. Good luck, Larry.
Thank you. Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Irma, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I have a couple of apple trees that have a fire blight. I just recently purchased a piece of property that has two older apple trees. They're beautiful, but my neighbors decided to help me out. And while I was not on the property, they trimmed them while they were still in blossom, and someone else sprayed them. And so when I arrived on the property, there it was. It looked like someone had set them on fire.
Huh.
So we were told to cut out the fire blight, the branches that were the most damaged. But what else do we need to do to save these trees?
Okay, so Irma, where are you?
We're in Falls City, Nebraska.
And what part of Nebraska is that?
That is the southernmost, easternmost part of Nebraska.
Okay, so a much warmer climate than most people would think of with Nebraska.
Yes.
How many years have you been there?
We actually just recently purchased the property in July, and like I said, my neighbors decided to help me out and do all this.
You purchased the property just this July, just like 6 months ago?
This July, yes.
But the trees were not in flower in July. This happened before.
One of my neighbors loves the apples, and the property had been abandoned for some time. This was the first year that he decided to spray while it was in blossom.
Pruning apple trees while they're flowering is generally not a bad thing.
Okay.
A lot of people would tell you to do it in the dead of winter, but I love the apple blossoms, so I wait as the branches are beginning to blossom, and that's when I do my pruning, because then you can fill the house with all the pruned branches, and if it
right.
you get it just at the right time, they'll go through that whole thing where they look like they're going to open red, then they turn to pink, then to white. I mean, it's tons of fun. But you never saw these trees, quote, in life. You never saw them when nobody was messing with them.
Well, actually, yes, I did. I've had my eye on the property for several years, and the apples were beautiful, but this year it was really bad. And the trees were not damaged previous to all of the spraying and the trimming. And of course, all my neighbors are afraid of bees, so, that's the spraying and
all
of
that. Oh, goodness. Don't they know that the bees that go to apple trees don't sting?
That's right. I'm trying to explain that.
Well, did you get any apples?
One of my other neighbors decided to pick all the apples while they were green, and no.
What?
I didn't get any apples. The apples normally are about the size of a grapefruit, and one of my neighbors decided to pick them, and they were about the size of a golf ball.
And you had yet to move in.
We were yet to move in, so I couldn't stop anything.
So I think you need an electric fence to protect you from your neighbors, kind of like
yes.
a Jurassic Park here. So the trees have gone now into the beginning of winter, and you said I interrupted you. You were pruning out some of the infected wood?
Yes, we did.
Can you still see affected branches?
One or two, but it's nothing like what it was.
Okay.
They're little short guys, so.
Okay, good.
And very high, so.
Okay, and I'm hoping that you haven't fed them or done anything to them?
We haven't done anything to them.
Okay.
Other than just trim the damaged.
Okay, so as we get more into winter, when you get to the real serious winter in like late January, go out there and just take off the fire blight branches, the ones that you can still see have this disease.
Okay.
And the secret to controlling it is to not just take off the diseased branch, but to cut 6 inches into good wood.
Oh.
A lot of people, see, because if you cut off a diseased branch and you miss a little bit, well, the disease is still there. If you cut into good wood, then you've got all the disease off. You can take it away, and you don't even need to clean your pruners in between because you didn't get any disease on the blades.
Okay.
So it's all right. You're just learning. It sounds like these trees are probably going to be pretty responsive. This spring, I'm not going to have you do any more pruning.
Okay.
Pruning can actually stimulate this disease. What I want you to do is just keep an eye on them. And if you see a branch where the leaves start curling up, get that branch off there right away. And then hopefully the tree will flower nicely. Then when all the flowers have fallen off and there are small golf ball sized fruits, do take off about half of them.
Okay.
Because apple trees will bear best when the developing fruit is thinned a little bit. Don't feed the trees. Fertilizer can really spur the growth of this disease organism. But you certainly may spread an inch of compost around the base of both trees. That would be a kind of a vector against future disease, and also feed them gently. Also, make sure there's nothing laying underneath them that could harbor this disease. Rake away any old leaves, get rid of any old branches, anything like that.
Okay.
And then, you know what? You know, just call me at harvest time.
Okay, I'll
next year, and tell me how you did, and then I'll tell you what to do as we move forward through the years.
I'll do that. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your information.
All right. Good luck, Irma.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I will appear at the Brandywine 100 Library in North Wilmington, Delaware, on Wednesday, February 22nd. At the Capitol Garden Show Saturday and Sunday, February 25th and 26th. At the Spring Garden Symposium in Fayetteville, North Carolina on March 25th. And in beautiful State College, PA, April 6th through the 8th. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with compost wisdom and more of your wise phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we will help you get or keep your compost cooking when we reveal whether you should be covering your pile or leaving it open. How's that for holiday festivities? In the meantime, more of your festive phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Larry, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, how you doing? Thank you for taking my call.
I am just Ducky Larry. How are you doing, and where are you calling from?
I'm doing fine. I'm calling from Philadelphia, but we have a home down in Cape May Point, New Jersey.
Okay, down the shore.
Right, and we're real close to the ocean. It's a very sandy soil.
How close to the ocean are you?
A block.
Okay.
One block. It's very sandy.
No, that's worth visiting. Larry, where do you live in Philly?
Across from the Art Museum.
Oh, nice. Those are nice. That's a beautiful area there.
It really is. Fairmount is really built up, and it's just tons of restaurants and cultural things.
Yeah, it's a beautiful area, Philly. All right, let's get back to Cape May. What do you need there?
Okay. Our property has a number of large poplar trees, and there's a, they call it a root mat. It's completely covering our backyard, basically. So some of the roots are penetrating the surface, but if you try to plant something, I mean, you need an axe or a reciprocating saw.
Okay, stop right there. So poplars are not normally found down the shore.
Mm.
You know, that seems like an unusual tree to me. I mean, do your neighbors have lots of these trees?
There's a lot where we are. I have to say, I'm pretty sure it is a poplar.
But you get a lot of shade in the summertime.
Oh, yeah, the shade is great.
Okay. So one thing you have to understand, because I think I know where you're going already, is you can't plant in that yard in the ground without risking losing the trees. If you had X-ray vision and you looked down, especially in sandy soil where there's nothing to even slow the root system down, you would see that exactly. It is a web of wood underneath the sand in between each of the trees. There is no open space. So is the issue here that you want to plant the yard, or are the above ground roots getting in your way and tripping you and stuff?
Well, there's some of both. Some of the roots that are penetrating the surface, they can trip you up. Is it possible to level the ground off?
Yes.
Raise it up and then being able to plant? Or
no.
Do I have to raise it up?
No. You'd have to raise it up so much it would kill the trees. No.
Oh.
But you have lots of options. You just have to get your head out of digging.
Okay.
So what you're going to do is, I know there's a lot of like landscapers and garden centers that just outside of Cape May. You're going to work with somebody, and you're going to get a truckload of topsoil or compost dropped off, and either you're going to spread it or you're going to have them spread it. So like it's an inch or two thick on top of the sand that you have now.
Okay.
And ideally what you would do is you would cover up the worst of the roots, but not affect what's called the root flare, where you see the poplar trees actually coming out of the ground, where you see the actual tree.
Okay.
But you are perfectly welcome to use an inch or two of topsoil or compost to reduce the trippage in the rest of the yard. And you could even do that once a season if you felt you had to. For instance, rather than try to, you know, cover it a foot deep, you would do it an inch or two every year for 2 or 3 years.
What about the planting? Is there any option to plant, or am
yes.
I really stuck?
Have you ever heard of the word container?
Yeah, sure.
Rather than try to dig through root mass and harm the trees and still get lousy results, you can get some nice containers, spread them out throughout the yard. If you wanted, you could even take some areas that are well away from the trunks of the trees, and you could box them off and make raised beds that would be about 4 foot square. And you would fill those raised beds with 12 inches of compost and topsoil mixture, and then you could put plants in those. Then you would have your seemingly in-ground plantings without any harm to the trees, and it would look like you had thought about this yourself. You had designed it. But you have to remember that if they're underneath the trees, you're going to be limited to shade-loving plants. You can't grow tomatoes underneath the canopy of tulip poplars. But you can plant begonias, you can plant New Guinea impatiens. There's lots of shade-loving flowers that you can plant that would be seasonal down there. Because you are so close to the ocean and your climate's moderated, in the fall you could take out the annual flowers and even put spring bulbs in the raised boxes and get a good display the next season. But just the basic thing, Larry, get your head out of the ground.
Yeah, it's been driving us crazy, but we didn't think of that.
Well, that's why I get the big money, Larry.
Well, you deserve it, too. You deserve it, too.
All right. Good luck. I'll be down to go for a swim. Let's see. The ocean should be warm around August 15th where you are.
You have my cell phone.
All right.
You can come down anytime you want.
I'll be there.
Great. Thank you.
Take care, man.
Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Eric, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing good, Eric. How are you, sir?
Oh, pretty good. Just out here enjoying the cold in Oklahoma.
Oh, okay. What part of Oklahoma?
Oklahoma City.
So you listen to us on KGOU?
Yes.
So what can we do for Eric in Oklahoma City?
I just bought a house earlier in August, and my wife and I decided we want to do an orchard. But I don't have a green thumb. I don't know where to start. And I've looked up a few things, like with OSU, their head of agricultural, but I don't know the right questions to ask. So with certain trees, I know that some Gala apples grow well here, Red Delicious, things like that. But what can I plant out here in the Midwest that can benefit themselves, like a species of tree that could help another species just live? Because we have pretty hot summers here.
Yeah.
We get some cold winters, and I just would like to be successful with it. And also another one would be if I was to plant a dummy tree, if you will, one that will catch the attention of the insects over the other ones from the ones that we want to consume.
Oh, you mean some sort of trap tree that would attract apple pests and peach pests?
Yeah, just anything that looks so much better than an apple tree that they just can't resist it and they would rather go there.
Good luck, man. I'll tell you what, forget your orchard, breed me such a tree, and you and I will both retire.
Oh, okay.
There are probably 40 different pests of apple trees that I could rattle off, like the coddling moth. And, you know, they only go for apples or other stone fruits. There is no trap tree. There are, for instance, with a coddling moth, one of the ways to attempt control is to hang fake apples in the tree that are covered with sticky stuff, but that's as close as you're going to get.
Okay.
Now, orchards are really not a hobby, man. They are full-time. Apple trees, you mentioned specifically, apple trees need to be pruned heavily every late winter, early spring. They need to have their fruits thinned. You need to have some kind of a spray program, even organic, to prevent pests and disease. And you really do have to compensate for your hot summers. I mean, there's all sorts of microclimates in your area, but apples are not going to be the easiest choice. Neither are peaches. You do have cold enough winters to meet the chilling requirements for other fruits. Why are you thinking so big and time intensive as opposed to much easier care, small fruits like raspberries, blackberries, things like that?
Well, I mean, I would definitely move on to that. What really did is it's a 5-acre property, acre and a half of it on the west side of the property. I cleared out, got it just looking beautiful, but there's a big area that I could actually see it with the clearing could look like a park. But if we were going to plant trees, we would say, let's benefit out of them in some kind of way.
But I have to tell you that a 1-acre orchard would be a 40-hour week for one person.
Okay.
The old farm rule is 1 acre per person per year.
Okay.
And that then becomes your full-time job.
All right.
So I wouldn't jump into fruit trees right away. But if you have a big open area and you started a field of raspberries this coming spring, within 3 or 4 years, you could be harvesting gallons of berries for like 6-week periods twice a year.
All right.
With virtually no care except harvesting.
All right. So raspberries would be the way to go in our area. Really, ultimately, it's all ornamental out of anything. If I could go out there, pull anything off a tree or off a vine and eat it, then that's good, too.
If you want to truly plant a couple of apple trees or something like that, I would go slow. I would not do it the first year. I would do more research, talk to people in your area who are growing, and they'll tell you how much work it is, and you might have to invest in some sort of shade cloth, certainly an irrigation system, maybe using gray water from your house to keep the plants from burning up in the summertime.
All right.
Whereby raspberries are much tougher than that, and they don't face as many pests.
All right. Sounds good. And I may send a picture in the future after I get something going.
Oh, please do. Please do. All right. You take care, sir.
All right. Thank you, Mike.
All right. It's time for the question of the week. Should you cover your compost? Alexis Landis, producer of You Bet Your Garden, please get us started by reading this week's intriguing question.
Sure, Mike. Henry in Ambler, PA writes, I'm using leaves, grass clippings, coffee grounds, etc. to make compost. Would it be helpful to cover the compost pile with a plastic tarp for the winter? Would that help break down the leaves and grass clippings? I could water it if the cover would keep it too dry.
All right, Alexis, you've been trapped on this ship long enough to know what I'm going to say here before I let loose with any kind of actual answer.
Answer? Yeah, right. I remember a couple of times where all you did was walk up and down the sidelines for 7 minutes and never get to an answer. Anyway, first, you're hoping that Henry shredded those leaves because whole leaves can take years to break down.
And whole leaves mat together so fiercely that water isn't going to be able to get to the center of his pile from any source, unless maybe you jam a hose down into the middle.
Second would be your double-barreled grass clipping warning. Number one, never include clippings from a lawn that's been treated with herbicides or the resulting compost could kill any plants that aren't lawn grass. And two, removing the clippings from your lawn prevents it from receiving a gentle, natural feeding every time you mow. Grass clippings are the perfect fertilizer for the times in between actual feedings.
Right, which is why you should always leave them on the lawn. That's very well done. Anything else?
Well, he does include the dreaded etc. in there. You always praise the power of coffee grounds to help shredded leaves cook down quickly, but many people make the mistake of including too much etc., like basic kitchen waste, which can slow things down, or in the worst case scenario, attract dangerous creatures like rats and raccoons.
Ooh, worst case scenario. I like that. That's going to be the title of my autobiography. Anyway, yes. Food waste is best recycled in a worm bin, and these are doubly great to have in areas where winter snow and ice can make it difficult to reach any kind of an outdoor compost area. The other good choice is a sealed outdoor bin. There are several excellent ones on the market made of recycled plastic that hold a lot of material, and they have locking lids that keep out the really vexing vermin like those raccoons.
Well, you have several, right?
Yeah, I got four of them total. I have two big round, they're called soil savers, which work great, but they're really bulky and difficult to transport. I also have two of the rectangular style ones, which are a much better choice if you're having them shipped to you or you have a small car, as they're made up of four flat panels and a lid. They're really easy to transport and assemble.
And they all work well for you?
Surprisingly well. I just have to make sure I have a big supply of shredded fall leaves right next to them to mix in when I add fresh kitchen waste over the winter.
Well, then it sounds like you just answered the question.
I did? I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. It was an accident. What did I say?
You have four black recycled plastic bins with lids that you keep locked, so it's obvious that you cover at least some of your compost.
Ah, okay, I got it. No, this is different. Henry wants to put a soft plastic tarp over his pile, which would smother it in addition to preventing rain from getting through. There's always open space inside the top of my sealed bins. Those lids are never laying right down on top of the material. Now, I did once pull a tarp over top of a big outdoor pile when I was just a compost beginner, thinking that it would trap heat and help cook the compost, but it just made it a nasty, moldy mess. And the small part that wasn't nasty in the spring was bone dry.
So you're saying no cover?
Well, not a, quote, soft one right on top of the material, but you could use a hard supported lid if you like. I remember seeing an amazing photo of a winter composting experiment by the great four-season farmer Elliot Coleman up in Maine, where he made a giant enclosure out of a lot of salvaged bales of hay and then put a big piece of wood over top to act as a lid and theoretically trap heat. He just lifted the lid anytime he needed to mix in new material, and once or twice a winter he'd leave the lid off during a snowstorm to keep things moist. That's very similar to how I, quote, water my otherwise sealed plastic bins. I just leave the lids off to catch a heavy rain once in a while.
So if Henry is composting inside something like a big wire fence, he could put some kind of hard lid on top?
Yeah, and you know, people in areas with really excessive rainfall could well benefit from covering their pile during really pounding thunderstorms. But being open to normal amounts of rain and snow helps keep the compost nice and moist, which is key to keeping it cooking along.
As is good airflow.
Right. Whatever you choose to do, don't let a soft cover sit right on top of your compost. Well, that sure was some hopefully helpful advice about your potentially cooking compost piles now, wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over in detail, just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week. Yikes, my producer is threatening to tarp my pile if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email, your tired, your poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. Please include your location if you choose to email us and or visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where nobody cares about your location and where you will find the answers to all those email questions you are going to send us, audio of this show, past shows, and our podcast. Elizabeth Perez-Luna is the executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week is Al Banks. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Larissa Sapko and Rich Banowitz keep our website light and airy. Our intern, Alicia Lester, is shaking her head and repeating the words, tarp my pile? Alexis Landis, who produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia, is assuring Alicia that it's not her fault. Our editor, Al Banks, is pointing at me and yelling, that's him, officers, the man over there. Guilty as charged, Mike McGrath. But thanks to my lawyer, Vinny Bamboom, I'll be back out to see you again next week. What do you get when you combine a green lifestyle, a blue Christmas, and black gold in your stocking? The annual You Bet Your Garden Holiday Spectacular, with Ken Queter and the Reindeer Band, holiday plant lore, and much, much more. That's the annual You Bet Your Garden Christmas Spectacular.